Okay, we are in an interesting chapter. Not very long, it's pretty short. And it's in the 20th chapter of Genesis.
From there, Avraham journeyed toward the territory of the Negev and lived between Kadesh and Shur. And he sojourned in Gerar. And Avraham said to Sarah, his wife, "She is my sister." And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, "Behold, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you have taken, for she is a man's wife." Now Abimelech had not approached her, so he said, "Lord, will you kill an innocent people? Did he not himself say to me, 'She is my sister'? And she herself said, 'He is my brother.' In the integrity of my heart and the innocence of my hands, I have done this." Then God said to him in the dream, "Yes, I know that you have done this in the integrity of your heart, and it was I who kept you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now then, return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, so that he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not return her, know that you shall surely die, you and all who are yours." So Abimelech rose early in the morning and called all his servants and told them all these things. And the men were very much afraid. Then Abimelech called Avraham and said to him, "What have you done to us? And how have I sinned against you, that you have brought on me and my kingdom a great sin? You have done to me things that ought not to be done." And Abimelech said to Avraham, "What did you see that you did this thing?" Avraham said, "I did it because I thought, 'There is no fear of God at all in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she is indeed my sister, the daughter of my father, though not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And when God caused me to wander from my father's house, I said to her, 'This is the kindness you must do to me. At every place at which we come, say of me, "He is my brother."'" Then Abimelech took sheep and oxen, and male servants and female servants, and gave them to Avraham, and returned Sarah his wife to him. And Abimelech said, "Behold, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you." So Sarai said, "Behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. It is a sign of your innocence in the eyes of all who are with you. And before everyone, you are vindicated." Then Avraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech, and also healed his wife and female slaves, so that they bore children. For the Lord had closed all the wombs of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife.
Interesting story? All right. First comment. Okay, yes.
Yeah. He must have kept her for some time for the people to have gotten a clue that they were barren. You know what I'm saying? It's like, because it says here at the end that the maids and the women were not bearing children, so he must have had her in his house for some time for people to even notice. No one's had a baby lately. No one's gotten pregnant lately. So I don't know how long he kept her. It doesn't say.
Yeah, it's an interesting statement. I didn't thought about that. But it would maybe, you know, well, maybe a week or two or maybe a month. We don't know.
In verse 16, it says that in my Bible, "And she was reproved," the last phrase there. Does that mean she was corrected?
Oh, we'll talk about that. It's a very interesting phrase in Hebrew. It kind of throws everybody off on a complete curve. Yes, in Hebrew it's a very unusual statement. And yes, it can mean rebuke. In fact, it means rebuke quite often. Yes. Any other statement? Oh, I guess that's it.
He said to him, he didn't think they were a God-fearing people. So I thought, well, then Abraham assumed that they weren't, but they were. They were, right?
We'll talk about that. Yes.
Okay.
I find it very fascinating. We'll reach up to that point anyway. Okay, the very first verse, might as well start there, right? And he dwelt between a place called Kadesh, which means holy. But that's not the name of the place at the time of Abraham. It had a different name. In the 17th chapter, verse 17, I believe it is, it clarifies that it really was Mizpat. Mizpat means the spring of judgment. That's actually the name of the place. Now, when we know this writing was written well after Abraham, because it later became known as a holy place, or a place of a place of where something was to be judged to be whether holy or not. Well, we're not going to go there today on it, just understand that terminology. And a place called Sur. Now, Sur basically means a wall. And basically means a wall, not like we think the walls here, but a wall of mountains. So this particular area had an area where he was at. There was a mountain range, so it's not really an unusual word. But the word Kadesh means to concentrate or to sanctify and prepare. We'll talk about that a little later on. But that's not how the word meant at the time of Abraham, because it was a different word during the time of Abraham. And so we get kind of confused up when we read the Torah, or at least the Genesis, rather. And they use words that to identify the location who the author who put together the book of Genesis, so people recognize where it was at, especially during the time of Israel and during the time of the kingdom of Israel and the kingdom of Judah. Now, he did something, right? Verse 2. Well, honest question. Did he lie?
He did lie, but...
He did lie, huh?
Well, no, but you know what? The thing is that the men, she was of her father, a sister by his father, his mother. Is that a normal procedure and not...
Yes, yes.
A sister, but is there any difference between the man and the woman?
He really was her brother.
Does it matter if it's by the man or the woman, the lineage, how they looked at it that day?
And that's the point in time, right. It wasn't until later on, during the time of Moses and the Israelites coming out of Egypt, were certain regulations set on who can marry, who cannot marry. It was not done before then. All right. Otherwise, there would have been Adam and Eve and nobody else. Right? All their sons and daughters could never have a relationship because they'd all die out. Because only Adam and Eve would be the only ones on the face of the earth. Yes?
He didn't lie, but he did deceive.
Ah, we'll find out. I like this information. Because, see, we're looking at this thing, and we have to ask ourselves a real deep question. What is the actions here of Abraham?
He wanted to protect his own self.
Wanted to protect his own self. I hope we can learn something a little bit different today. I'm sorry, what?
Protect his wife.
Oh. Okay. We're only in the second verse so far. What's the name of the king? What does that name mean? The father of the king, or the king is father. That basically means Abba and Melech. Now, there is an assumption here that we, as we read back on the 20th first century, backwards in time, and we build up assumptions of what it really says. And we do that because why? That's all we have, right? So we have to kind of break it down a little bit, start doing our thinking, and say, what is the message here? Now, just keep one thing in mind. This was approximately 370 years after the flood. Not 3,000 years, just 370 years after the flood. Now, what was he called? What was the creator of heaven called during that time? Yeah, right there, El Shaddai. All right, the destroyer. One that destroyed life. One that destroyed the face of the earth. One that destroyed all life. And he preserved only a small amount. A very small amount. At this point in time, only 370 years, approximately after the flood, do you think the planet Earth was having 15 billion people on it? Did it have a billion people on it? Not even that much. Did it have 150 million? No. At the very odd, maybe pushing real close, we might get maybe a million. So it's not that massively populated. After 370 years, you know. They started out from just three families. So it not multiplied rapidly. Although we have a picture of them of mine. They must have had 17 kids every day. Where did they have that many kids? Because we're looking 370 years later. Now something else took place. Verse 3, it says, Elohim came to Abimelech in a dream by night. Now here, he came and he said something to him. Now I thought God only talked to righteous people in a dream. I thought God only honored and talked to Abraham. He talked to a man who was called what? What was his name? Abimelech. All right. In our thinking, in our assumption, which we assume too, that, oh, this guy was a pagan. This guy was anti-God. He worshipped stars, or he worshipped stones, or he worshipped... Doesn't say that about him. Listen very carefully what he said to, when God brought this information to Abimelech, he said something very interesting. And he says, indeed, a dead man you become. Ooh. Now, this is a dream. Now, if you were Abimelech, and you heard God talk with you in a dream, what do you think? He's talking to you in a real soft, quiet voice and say, by the way, you're a dead man. Or do you think he really let him know you're a dead man? It was what you would call today a nightmare. We would be terrified. And that's what happened to this man, didn't he? He's not terrified. In the dream, he just says, you're a dead man. But Abimelech said, wait. This is my point. I think at this point in time, verse 4, he's already woken up. That was just a statement in the middle of the dream. All of a sudden, he comes up here. And he says, but Abimelech had not come near her. And he said, Lord, pagan, stone, will you slay what? A righteous nation. Now, we don't look at his area. Why it's called, nor did we look, and we don't even accept the mere fact, even though the word of God says, a righteous nation. Now in our thinking, righteous means what? Holy, holy unto the Lord God, I pray to him about it. What does holy, what is righteousness, what gives a man be called righteous, according to the Torah at this point in time? What? Faith, he believed God. So here we're talking about Abimelech. Was he a loser? He was a king. The land belonged to him. Right? So we had to put ourselves in perspective at that point in time. What was happening here? And what did Elohim say back to him? But he said, see, my sister, in the integrity of my heart, those are the big words. He didn't say, in the foolishness of my heart, in the lust of my heart, and the covetousness of my mind. No. Integrity, that's a big word. Even in Hebrew. What's integrity mean? Honestly. Truthfully. Upright. Decent. Wow. This guy, a bad guy? Okay, so we have to kind of look at ourselves. We have to ask ourselves some questions. What is this all about? And it seems like there was another dream, because the following verse, God again talks to him in a dream. And as Elohim said to him in another dream, or in a dream, he says, yes, I know. You did not do this in the integrity of your heart. Well, that's the word of Elohim, isn't it? Do you think this man had integrity? The word of Elohim says, yes, he did. So this man was not a bad man. This man was not a loser. This man was not a creep. This man was not, he was just a man. Right? Had to be king of that area, responsible for the area which he was allowed to be in, which was a Ur. It's an area which Abraham decided to live. We'll talk about that in a minute. He says, interesting here, he says, verse 6 there, for I also withheld you from sinning against Abraham. Is that what it says? Sinning against Sarah.
Nope.
Okay. I prevented you from sinning against yourself. Nope. He said me. Now, I want to be able to let you know, next chapter, I have broken up into three segments. And it's about Sarah. And when we look at this thing, when we look at it, we say, oh, now I understand why it's a transgression against the creator of heaven and earth. And he stopped a man from doing it. Why? Because the man did not have integrity? The man was a creep? No. Even the creator of the word of God says, no, he is a upright man. He has integrity. He has goodness about him. Maybe not to your schedule, maybe not to my elevation, maybe not to anybody else's, but here, the eternal creator, yeah. At the level you are at, you have integrity. But see, God does not look at things the way we look at things. Human beings look at human beings, see what human beings do, and we judge human beings because we judge human beings. Why? Because that's what's before our face. That's what's written down. We judge ourselves, we judge people according to what their actions do, what they said. Now look at them. How many of you said, well, Abraham lied? Judgment is real simple. He must have lied. Right? He had a good reason to lie. To protect himself. Very self-centered man. Man looked out for himself, right? And on top of all this, he was going to give away whatever happened to his wife. That's okay, long as I am protected. That's the viewpoint, right? That's how we see it from it, because that's what it says, right? So it must be true. Right? So far? Now look, verse 7 is very important. What did he tell Abimelech? Verse 7. Prophet! First time that word shows up. Did you know that? Now, in our interpretation of a modern Christian 21st century world, a prophet is somebody who foretells the future. Is that what the word prophet means in Hebrew? What does the word prophet mean in Hebrew? Oh, I'm sorry, what?
Someone who speaks God's word.
He speaks God's word. And this is what he told Abimelech. Because the word really comes from being a spokesman or a speaker for me. Now, he's not going to predict the future. He's just going to speak for me. And then, what took place? What happened? He got up early in the morning. I mean, before the sun came up. He was on the morning watch. It's still dark outside, by the way. And how did he feel? Oh, I had a good night's sleep. Oh, he had a nightmare, for crying out loud. It frightened him, scared him so much. And he called all of the men. And he probably would not, by the way, court order. Let's have a minute of the meeting here. What was it? What was the minute of the last meeting? Nothing like that. Yes.
Well, he told them in their ears. I thought about that. So it wasn't something that was like broadcasted out loud. But Abimelech went and told maybe the main people that he believed in. Like, say you had a cabinet of men like anybody would. I thought I could just see him. Because I know they're very careful about how they words get out that they don't get twisted or confused. So he told them in their ears.
Right.
And is that true, though?
Well, it means that they hear in their, they woke them up, talked to them, and told them so in their hearing area that they could actually hear the things. And it said something about the men. Wait, they what? Why were they afraid for? Did God speak against the men? Did God curse the men? Did God stop the men? Did God do something? Or did he tell Amalek? Or he wouldn't he just, wouldn't it just Amalek? Wasn't it just Amalek and Sarah? Amalek, Sarah, and Abraham? Why are other men involved? We have a story behind the story, and there's a reason why God did what he did. I'm sorry, what? Leadership. Listen, God is very, very obvious that we read in anything in the Bible where the leadership of a country, leadership, a high-ranking individual, they are the least of the people in the country. Are they? That's right?
No.
No. Oh. Who are they then?
They're the top dogs.
They represent the country. Whether you like it or not, our president of the United States represents the United States of America. You may not like him, beside the point. He represents the United States of America, as the previous one did. Every president represents that. Every ambassador represents the United States of America. Big name. Every senator, every representative represents you. Right? Whether you like them or not. And what does God say about the leadership? When you lead them astray, you lie to them, I'm going to be on your case. Now, here, what is it telling us so far? He wasn't talking about, the Joe Blow, who had a farm, 40 miles away, taking care of his cattle or his sheep. That didn't affect him. It affected the king and his men, the leadership. Not every male in that territory, just him and his men, those that were with him. And they became very much afraid. Why were they afraid for? What would cause, at this point in time in history, for men to be afraid of the El Shaddai? They remember the flood. Oh, yeah. Now, Abraham said something unusual. He said there, verse 11, because I thought, surely the fear of Elohim is not in this place. Why would he make a statement like that for? Did he have evidence? No. Why would he say that statement for? Sorry, what?
Justify.
That's an easy thing to say, right? He was trying to justify himself. That's a good statement. Go ahead.
Also, because of his experience in Egypt and in other places, not every place showed fear of God.
What happened two chapters ago? Sodom and Gomorrah. And what was the issue of that one? All the way down to 10. No fear of God in Sodom and Gomorrah. Why did Abraham have to move from the location where he was at and head south? Because Gerar became the central focus point of all trade. No longer is Sodom and Gomorrah the central focus of all trade. It ceased to exist. So in Abraham's thinking, is this going to be like Sodom and Gomorrah? Yes.
You also think about it in terms of, even though, like when God tells Abimelech, if you don't rectify this, I'm not only going to punish you, I'm going to punish
yes.
those who answer to you. You think about it in terms of and in the past, we've had presidents who have been assassinated. Like when Kennedy was assassinated, there were probably some in this room who remember exactly where they were.
Yeah.
When he was assassinated. Now, many of those people didn't vote for him either.
Doesn't matter.
They didn't like him. But yet, when they heard of Kennedy's death, they were profoundly changed by it and profoundly saddened and broken by it, even though they didn't like the man. 2 days before, they were probably saying all sorts of nasty things about him. But something changes when your leader is assassinated, when your leader is killed like that.
Right.
And that would frighten anyone.
Yeah. Frighten anyone is correct.
It's a wake-up call.
Now, okay, at this particular point in time, I'm going to ask you some questions. God, he said, because you're going to kill me. That's what Abraham said, right? Oh, wow, I can't believe this. The great man who went to war and destroyed five big governments and destroyed them and killed the kings. Doesn't he have any guts? Past history, a lot of guts, right? Killed five kings, destroyed their entire empire, right? Wow. This guy's a coward? Is this a story about a coward? Ellie?
Well, it can just as easily be protection of his wife. If they take her, she's in a, she's with the king one time at least, and then she's off in a harem for the rest of her life. So this kept, did it keep him out of trouble, or did it save her life? It's
yeah,
not
we'll get,
just him.
The central focus point of this story is about, and it's aimed at, Sarah. And next week, we'll begin to talk about her. Because he says, a sin against me. Yes.
To me, I wasn't surprised at the fear, because people are people and we're afraid of stuff at the weirdest times sometimes. But, you know, it's funny that you bring up, you know, he went to war and he did. He helped take down those five evil kings and this and that and all of that. But, you know, there is a difference between going to war with a bunch of men and a bunch of weapons and leaving your wife at home protected. There's a difference between that and going with your wife on your arm to a place in a much more vulnerable position. They were not necessarily armed for battle at this point, and there were different dynamics that they were going to have to deal with.
It's very funny when I read this story. Yes, here's a question. More statement.
We know Abraham is known for his trust.
Right.
Okay. So, giving his wife over, trusting no matter what, she's going to be protected because there's a promise still through the seed that's still protected. Is that why Jehovah says, this is a sin against me?
Yeah, we'll get there next week. more directly about it, because I tell you, Sarah is one of the most important women that has ever been on the face of the earth. And I don't know if anybody can outperform her. It's very important. We learn that. Later on, next week, hopefully I can go into more detail of why all this stuff took place. And he says now, but sure, she is my wife. All right. And he says something very odd. He says now, when God called me out from my father's place, I told my wife, be kind to me. That's an odd statement, right? Make sure you tell everybody you're on my I'm your brother. Now, we only see one of the incidences where it actually she said that, right? That's the only one that's recorded. So she probably must have said that several times in several different locations, wherever they were. Doesn't make any difference. But no one else ever think, oh, this is a gorgeous lady. They just didn't do it. I don't ask me why. I haven't got an answer. Don't go beyond that point. Anyway, when God called him a prophet, and he also said, by the way, if Abraham does not pray for you, the curse remains. Abraham was a coward, right? He was a loser at this point in time in life, right? He was no good. Already had a son, right? Hagar, and Ishmael, Mem, already had that. They haven't got rid of him yet, but we're not there yet. And so Abimelech didn't say, get out of my country and never return. Why did he say the opposite? He what? He believed God. This man is a prophet.
Yeah.
He speaks for me. You better listen to what this man has to say. And that's what Abimelech did. He didn't like the thing that happened, but nonetheless, there was something that was happening to not just to him, but his family and all the men that were with him. Something took place. Right? So I have to ask you a question. We see that Abraham, Elohim rather, said to Abraham, he is my spokesman. Was this event to show us the lack of belief that Abram had in trusting Elohim? Or was it to give a very strong message to Abimelech and all his men? God is involved with this story all the way. He's not I gotta save you now. He destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, knowing Abram had to leave. Because no trade is finished. No more trade. Got to go to the next trading post, which was at this particular place. What was necessary? Now, I'll ask you a question. Don't have to answer it. But I want you to think about it. All right? Since it was a message, if it was a message to Abimelech and his men, what about us today? Is Abraham no longer a spokesman for God? He's dead, buried in his grave. Okay, so we had to pay a little bit closer attention as we get involved more and more with Abraham, right? So telling Sarah today, after we finish the story of Abraham, before we go into Isaac's life, I'm going to make a break. Now we're going to talk about, bring up all of the events that happened to Abraham's life and where God is involved with each and every one of his life. Helps us to put back to our memory that much as God is involved with this event, when he called out Abraham from his father, he'd been involved with everything in that man's life. We have to learn how God thinks, how God is, and what God's going to say and do. So anyway, so Abraham, verse 14, he gave him a lot of sheep and oxen, male, female servants, and so on and so forth, and restored Sarah back. But he said something very interesting to Sarah, verse 16. No, he's talking to Sarah here, not Abraham. Behold, I have given your brother. Now, why didn't it say, behold, I have given your husband? He acknowledged, yeah, they are brother and sisters. Simple as that. He also knows this point in time in his life, Abraham is a spokesman for the creator of heaven and earth. They were very much aware what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah. They weren't innocent people, unknown, because according to the prophets and according to the story, the smoke arose and went all the way up to covering almost half what we call the Dead Sea land. It spread outward all over the place. It could not have been avoided. It wasn't just a little tiny smoke. It was massive, huge. All those cities burned up and the smoke rose high and scattered and went broadly. So everybody got to see what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah and the other little cities. Do you think fear of God would have been in the man? Yeah. So these were not ignorant people. And God says, you have integrity, and no, your nation is a righteous one. Remember, there must have been more than 10 there. No, just a tongue-in-cheek statement. But Abraham didn't know that, because that wasn't God didn't keep from that one. And verse 16 is very fascinating. He gave him silver and gold. And then she said something. Well, he said something. All right. Indeed, who are with you? See, indeed, this vindication you befall all who are with you, talking to Sarah, and before everyone. Thus, she was, and that old English word is rebuke, or reproved. And we say, that doesn't sound very good. Was she being corrected? I'll say, what?
I would say yes.
You would say yes, okay. Anybody else would say yes? Okay. Right, yeah, the word rebuke is massive. I just want, in the old English, King James Version, they had the word rebuke in it. And so I'm just addressing that subject matter right now. Yours says reproof. Same thing as rebuke. But technically speaking, it means to be made right. To be made, not corrected, but to be not justified, but vindicated is a better word for it. Yes. Yeah. So she's looking at all that stuff, see.
Because I've got the New American Standard Bible.
I had to do this because sometimes you beat me up.
I do sometimes. I'm sorry. Because it says here in my translation, going up a little bit, behold, it is your vindication before all who are with you, and before all men you are cleared.
Correct.
That's how my translation says.
There's another translation. Before everyone you are cleared. Before everyone you are, and all before all men you are righted.
Here's a good one.
Before all you are to be honored. Yes.
Okay, this one says, and Abimelech said, behold, my land is before you, live where it pleases you. And Sarah said, behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces
right,
of
yes.
silver as a covering.
The last part.
Oh, behold, it is a covering of the eyes to all that are with you, and with all men, you are made right.
You're made right. And so, well, I'm going to address this unusual statement in 1611 English. And we don't like 1611 English anymore. However, when we look at the Hebrew, it does mean you have been justified. You now, no one can bring this charge against you. How? What did he do to do her? He gave all this stuff to her brother.
Cleared of all wrong.
Okay. Nothing happened.
Yeah.
There was no touching. Remember, God, I prevented you from touching her. For Abimelech's sake, I stopped you from touching her. It wasn't Sarah said, don't touch me. It wasn't Abimelech says, well, you know, I'm not going to touch her. No, it's God who said, I stopped you from touching her because you're transgressing against me. Hope we understand that by next week. Yes.
In that verse 16, it says, and with all men you are made right. Now, that'd go back to verse 8, and the men were greatly afraid. That'd be talking about those men there, right?
Being made right. In a sense, she didn't do anything wrong.
It'd go back to verse 8, where the men he's saying is in the cabinet.
Right.
Okay.
So far, so good. I'm sorry, Tammy. I had to beat you to it before you step all the way from me. She does that on me several times. I don't mind it, but today I had to beat her to it. Okay. Verse 17. This is a very unusual statement. And Abraham did something. He prayed. Why? I'm sorry, what?
He was rather to forgive. If Abraham was willing to forgive Abimelech,
no,
he got right.
Why. He didn't pray because of all the gifts. He didn't pray because of this. He didn't pray because of that. He prayed because of why? He speaks for Elohim. Right? keep that in mind, because he Elohim told him, Abraham must pray for you. Hear what he has to say. So we're going to listen now. What did Abraham say? Don't know. What did he say? He said what?
He obviously prayed to ask God to open the wombs of the women because they said that children.
Because Elohim, because Abraham prayed, Elohim did something. It's called healed. Do you know what that word means? Yeah, I'm sick. No, I'm well. Right? God brought forth something, and we think of healing, I'm sorry, of sicknesses or broken bones or a headache or upset stomach, maybe, I'm sorry to say it, but even sometimes our internal things are diseased. But this isn't happening here. That's not what the word really means. Yes? Score of favor? Technically, the word comes from, has different meanings on it. It means to mend. To mend. Something's been damaged. He is going to now mend it. That's a little bit different than, oh, the person's got a heart problem. We'll go into the book of Job here just a minute. Very, very important. By the way, the book of Job is the oldest known writing known to mankind. It's so old, it's hard for a translation to come up. And that's why the book of Job sometimes is very greatly misunderstood, because they try to figure out it means this, means that, means this, means that, means this, because different words were old words, written in an entirely different language, an entirely different dialect. But I want to talk about that. This means also means to cure or to pardon or to repair or to make complete or make whole again that which was no longer whole. So the word healing is not just about I'm sick. Got bad eyes. My eyes are burning, you know. It's something that God did, right? See, God did this, right? For 18, for God had closed up. We'll get into that word later. I want to reach a couple of places here. So it does not really mean we think about healing in the sense the guy is sick. In 1 Kings, don't have to turn there, write it down. 18, verse 30. This is under Elijah. And he said to the people, 18, verse 30, come near unto me. And all the people came near to him, and he repaired the altar that was broken down. Same word for to heal. Same word to mend. Same word to make whole. So when we think about what took place during Ambiblic's time, something was torn down or something was damaged. And God says, he closed up the womb. What's closed up mean? Before we go there, I want you to go to Job. Job 5. Job 5. This one's part kind of hard for people to accept. But since the Torah backs it up, it's probably more close to that translation of being true. I'm not saying it's the best translation I have. I just happen to have it. Verse 18. Job 5, verse 18. Talk about God, talk about Elohim, talk about the creator of heaven and earth. Job says, or in the fifth chapter of the book, Job says, for he, God, makes sore, that means to bring forth pain, and binds up, talk about that a little later, and he wounds, which means to smite thoroughly. And his hand makes whole, makes well, makes repairs. So we see here that God, Job, according to the book of Job, and elsewhere in Proverbs, it is God who brings forth the pain. Did God bring forth the pain to Amalek? Or his women? Brought forth the pain, or not, in a sense, it wasn't sorrow, it was he closed up, or he ceased for it to work. When he closes it up, that means it's something being held back. It can mean to enclose. Does not necessarily mean, quote, what we think it means, in a quote, in a very negative word. Could mean that they couldn't have children. I don't know how long, like Tammy was talking about, how long this took place. Doesn't tell you how long. A whole lot quicker than we think. I mean, it's not like 10 years, 20 years, 30 years later, because Isaac's not on the scene yet. It's only 4 years later that Isaac comes on the scene, or a few years later, Isaac comes on the scene. So it's that time period when Sodom and Gomorrah was destroyed to the time Isaac shows up on the scene, which we'll talk about that a little bit next week. So he no longer does he close up. Now it's restored. It's healed. It's brought back to its function that was once meant to be. All right? We bind up. You know what binds up means? It says that he, Job, says, he's the one that brings forth the sore. He's the one that brings forth the pain. He's the one that brings forth the agony. He's the one that brings forth the sorrow. We don't like that about God, do we? Don't like it about it. Let's not talk about that one. Let's talk about bond that binds. Well, let's go back here. Isaiah 61. Very, very famous statement. Isaiah 61. You know, God said he's going to come and bring back the outcast of Israel. Right? That's what prophecy says. Who cast them out? Did they leave on their own? No, they're cast out by the Creator of heaven and earth. He cast them out. He says, I'm going to bring them back. It's the spirit of Adonai Yahuwah is upon me because Yahuwah has anointed me to preach good tidings unto the meek. And he sent me to bind up the brokenhearted. Now, we could look at this in our human beings. We say, yeah, my heart was broken by this guy or this person or my children or my grandma. My heart was broken because... wait a minute. Job, he says, I'm one that brings forth the sorrow. I'm the one that brings forth the brokenhearted. I'm the one that brings forth the stuff. And he says, I am going to bind it up. I'm going to put it back together again. I'm going to put it all back together again. Continue on with this verse. And he says something very fascinating. To proclaim liberty to the captives. We think that means whom? The guy in prison? What happened in the history of Israel? They were taken captive. What happened to the nation of Judah? They were taken captive. Who put them into captivity? Nebuchadnezzar? God. We don't like to look at God at this point, but the Messiah says, I'm going to bring them back. It's my job now. And I'm going to bring them back. I'm going to give them freedom. They're going to be free to leave and come back. Oh, he has to give them freedom. He, Messiah, gives the captivities freedom. We say, yeah, how does he do that? Well, he's going to war. Anyway, he says just to proclaim freedom. He's going to proclaim something. He's going to open his mouth and proclaim something. He's going to proclaim that what? The captivities are going to be free. But what time? When? Tomorrow? Next year? At the time of Isaiah? Maybe it's the time of Messiah. Because he said, this part has been filled up in your ears now. He's proclaiming it, but nothing's happened. Did the Messiah ever free anybody who was in captivity? Who? Who was in captivity during the time of Yeshua? Who was thrown out in captivity, who still are in captivity? He sent his disciples to go unto the house of Israel, who were outside, who were captives, who were not allowed to be bound back up again, were not allowed to be brought back into the assembly. He must not have done a good job, did he? Because that's what this is all about. Right? So when we look at Amalek, we see the story that's coming back. What does this tell you about God? Sorry, what? All in all, okay. Ellie?
He's a good parent.
He's what?
He's a good parent. He disciplines, but then he lets it be fixed.
Sometimes I think he's probably a harder parent than we are. By a big margin. Yes?
God is not out to condemn us. He is out to improve us.
Okay. That's wonderful to be reproved by him, right? You.
God also lets us learn our lessons by our actions. Like he helps. It's like a child training moment. That, you know, Abimelech could see God's hand move with graces and gentleness and love, that in his mercy, Abimelech recognized something and he could teach it to his people about who God is.
Yes, the people knew who God was. They were terrified because what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah a few years later or earlier.
Well, you know, we can get mesmerized by having a lot of fancy cars and big houses, and maybe that's what happened.
Yeah,
he had the
right,
best
yeah.
castle on the block.
In those days, mesmerized by fancy chariots and good horses. Anyway, so what is it that we are to learn that Abimelech learned? Humbleness.
Humility.
Respect. Fear the Lord. And don't speak evil against a prophet, because it's going to be bad news for you. Near the beginning, he said, I will bless those that bless you, and I'll curse those that curse you. Don't mess around with Abraham. Abraham, remember, and this king knew that Abraham destroyed five powers, killed their king. Would you think he might have had a little bit of fear troubling with Abraham? Maybe Abraham would go to war against him and wipe him out. He says, oh no, stable man. Anywhere you want, best place you want, go take it. I'm not saying it's what he thought, but I'm saying Abraham was well known. He was not just an ordinary shepherd out there with one or two sheep. He had 390 men or 380 men, yes.
But you have to wonder then, if he knew what Abraham was capable of as a warlord, why in the world would he presume to take his sister?
Let me ask you a question. You don't have to answer it. Why was not Abraham chastised? Or was he chastised?